Hello, everybody, and welcome to Future Considerations. It's been a minute. This is Eleni, also known as Twitter user at Strong4Check.
This is Mike Murphy, also known as at DigDeepBSB, a screen name that I just chose one day, and now I'll never change it out of anxiety. That's the way these things work.
And this is Dan, and you can find me on Twitter at DRiceHockey. This is our 11th episode, which is pretty amazing and awesome, and really cool that we get to do this. As Eleni said, it's been a minute. We had a little brief previous episode where Mike and I interviewed Autumn McDougall. Hopefully everybody out there listened to that. But a lot has really gone down since our last full episode, including there's a whole nother team, Mike. A whole nother team just magically appeared since we last did a podcast. What are your thoughts on this?
It's kind of hilarious because it was reaching the point of the offseason, like right before this happened, we're like, nah, they're not going to expand. Like, it's way too late. Why would they expand now? And then, boom, we have a Montreal team, which is something the PHF, you know, back when it was the NWHL, has had in its sights and its design since year one. It's something they've always wanted to do, is have a footprint in Canada. And I feel like they saw this opportunity to make sure they have a presence there, because, you know, they know they're going to be directly competing with the PWHPA league. I'm cracking up watching Eleni try to talk to her dog Willie so that he doesn't cry during the podcast. But it's kind of wild. You know, the details are still emerging. This team, you can tell it's still a bit of a work in progress in terms of front office, and they're going to do a bit of a barnstorming thing. They don't have a true home rink. They do have a home base, which is, it's about resources to the athletes, which is great. But I mean, as of the podcast, we have 16 players signed. So, I mean, this team is a lot more complete than a few others, Willie. Oh my God. And including some pretty big names like Anne-Sophie Bette and some CWHL vets, a lot of players who were in the P-dubs last year. This team's going to have great goaltending, and a personal favorite of everyone on this pod, the return of Brooke Stacey, which is something that I know a lot of fans, Buttes fans, I'm sure they wish that Brooke was back with Buffalo, but I think everyone is just happy to see Brooke Stacey back in the pro game.
Yeah, I feel like this might be an unpopular position, but I don't necessarily, obviously you would like for them to have a home rink. And I'm not even going to explain why, because I feel like those reasons are obvious, but I also feel like there's something kind of cool about, like, this is a new team in the area and we're going to go to a bunch of different rinks in the Quebec area. And like, there's something about like connecting with different parts of your community that I think is really cool. And I think in cities where, like, I think about Boston and how they play in Brighton and how Brighton's not terribly accessible to everybody and how cool it would be to see them play at the UMass Boston rink or to play out in Winthrop or to play on the Cape and to do like a different, even just showcases where people can see, because I feel like the people who know about the team are just the people who happen to like be around. So there's something kind of cool about Montreal getting to do that, even though I'm sure it was not intentional. And it's like probably not going to be the cool marketing opportunity that I'm pretending it is. But it's very exciting. I think seeing Anne-Sophie Bette back, I kind of joked that I wanted that to happen and then I manifested it. So if you have things that you would like to manifest, you can DM them to me and we'll talk about pricing. She's an incredible hockey player. She has been incredible at the club level. I don't think she's ever played a season where she scored like under a point and a half a game.
No, she's a monster.
She really is just unstoppable. And she's not, it's not like she's big. She just like, you just, I don't know. She's just one of those people, you can't get her off the puck. And she has a lot of great chemistry with some of the other players that they've signed who either played with her in the CWHL and or played with her in the PWHPA. In the PWHPA, she had started to gel really well with Sarah Laforte, who is one of the most prodigal Canadian BU players right behind Pooh, I would think, just was an insane NCAA player. And if they are able to replicate that chemistry in the PHF, it's going to be really freaking scary for everybody else. Yeah, I love their roster so far. I think it's really exciting. They've got a lot of really cool rookies on the roster too, that I think we may see some of them really surprise us in terms of the production that we're maybe predicting they're going to have.
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing for me is they're already at 16 players. And the team was announced, I want to say, like less than a month ago, right? Like, so that's an interesting aspect for me. I echo what Mike said. We love Brooke Stacey here. We're really stoked to see her back. Really, really talented player, all-star, who stepped away from the game at the all-star break that year in Boston, and to give birth to a child. And then, you know, Eleni kind of swung me around on this kind of barnstorming idea where they're going around and kind of putting themselves out there. And I kind of like that. It's something the Riveters did a little bit of last season, where they played their first two games at a different location. They played it in, I'm forgetting the name of the arena, but it wasn't in Newark. And but that was a less accessible place than Newark is. So it's, you put them back in Newark, and then you have many more options to get people to your games via public transportation, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure, I'm almost positive Montreal didn't plan it this way, the way that we're thinking of it maybe right now. I think it was just kind of like they're scrambling and we don't really have anything set up right now. So this is what our distant plan is, and we're working through it. And, you know, that's, hopefully everything works out smooth. We don't want to be like poo-pooing on anybody or nothing like that. But they do have a squad put together. Almost all the teams are getting up there now in as far as their number of signings. And in the league total, we're up over 100. The Buttes are pretty much done. Everything that I've been told is they may be looking to sign one to two more players, but this is what you see is what you got now with their 20 players, I believe, that they have signed, right, Mike? The Connecticut Whale have the fewest players signed. They only have 12. I think there's other players signed. We'll get into that maybe a little bit later on in the show. But they still have 12 really good players signed on their roster right now, including the reigning MVP.
Yeah, pretty good player. It's really interesting to see how these signings have come around. Cause like Eleni said, it's kind of wild that the Montreal team is like, oh yeah, this team's like its core is all there. They have great goaltending. They're going to score goals and they have some good defenders. So like the bulk of the Montreal team's in place. Everyone knows that the Whale team's going to be bonkers, right? We've heard a couple players reported by Dan and others that like we have a feeling we'll land in Connecticut. So they're at 12 official signings, right? And then, like, you know, we expect some players to be back. Like, we expect, you know, Jillian Dempsey to be back. We hope players like Shannon Turner will be back. And so there's these kind of known things going on, which is interesting to me. But the thing that is more interesting at this juncture, and it kind of resurfaced, although I think something that Dan mentioned earlier along, is these noteworthy veterans who are feel like they're in this unique place of trying to find a home. And we talked a little bit about this with Audra Richards, and these players who's like undeniable talents, like all-star caliber players with like proven commodities, players you want to have on your team if you want to win hockey games. And there's some noteworthy veterans out there who it appears are having trouble kind of landing on rosters, which has been one of the more interesting and, you know, for a lot of fans, frustrating storylines of this offseason.
Yeah, that's something that we mentioned. The influx of European players, not as many teams as we maybe expected. And there's only so many spots. The other league is happening, it's not happening, it's happening. But there's not that many spots over there either. That's going to be limited as well.
I've essentially heard that, like, if you're not on a national team roster, your chances of making a PWHP roster this year are vanishingly slim. And I don't know if I really have an opinion on that. I guess it doesn't surprise me. It's kind of what I expected. And to be honest, that's what the league is going to look like for them too. I think anybody who thinks otherwise is fooling themselves. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It was always supposed to be that, and that's fine. But that does mean there are a lot of people who played in the PWHPA showcases last year who know that they're not going to play in that league this year, and would rather not take their chances on a tryout that probably doesn't really mean anything for them, and would rather get paid $19,000 a year to play a season where they know what it's going to be like. They know people that play in this league. It's not a groundbreaking situation. It's still the PHF, and it's better every year, but it's certainly not, you know, the WNBA overnight or anything, but they at least know that they will play. And I think it is coming down to that. And unfortunately, what that means is that there really just are more players than there are spots to play. And that's great in theory. It's good for the sport, but on an individual level, it's devastating. It's definitely really hard to watch. I'm looking at the list of people that haven't been signed yet that we're thinking about. And like, theoretically, as far as we know about the Whale roster, they could sign all of these people. They won't, but it would be really funny if they did. Would be really funny if they did. Colton, if you're listening to this, it would be really funny.
These
would be really good. I feel like I need to make a Twitter thread of each of these veterans where I'm talking about them like shelter pets, like they're looking for homes. And like, here is this person's top three best qualities. Someone please sign them because I like them so much. But I won't do that because it's pedantic and weird, but it is funny.
I know at least three, probably four of the players on that list that we're both looking at. They've reached out to Connecticut. So that's Colton is aware of their availability, and it's just a matter of, you know, every player's situation is different. Can they make it work? At the top of our list here is Taylor Kersey. She's a player where she's not going to give up her day job to go move somewhere to play hockey. Like that's just not the way it's going to work. She needs to find a way to make that work. And that limits the amount of opportunities, realistic opportunities that she has. Because we're at the point now where we don't want players just flying in and playing on game day, right? We want players that are training with their teammates and practicing with their teammates so that they can be the best they can be, like professionals, right? So the days of I think, us seeing that are going to be slim and you know, far between.
Cases, but maybe more like, you know, someone like in the past where Taylor Kersey would be your captain, who would be in a position where maybe she practices once a week instead of two or three times a week, and she's just there for game days. Maybe it's now a case of like, hey, we need some scoring depth. It's okay if a Kersey's not here for every practice. She's going to play on the third line and the second power play unit.
Yeah.
Like that kind of situation, which changes her role, changes likely what her compensation would look like, even though everyone in the world knows that Taylor Kersey is a real player, like a goal scoring high shot volume winger. Those are very valuable players. Just like Audra Richards is kind of a similar, like what do those players do? They do the things that make you win hockey games. We talked about the list, just to go down the list of some noteworthy veterans who don't seem to have a home at the moment. You have Moose, Rebecca Morse, you have Emily Fluke, who feels like Emily Fluke's been underrated her entire pro career.
Top 10 in points, I think.
take a minute to look at Emily Fluke's career points per game and what she's done every season. All she does is do the things that win hockey games. Amanda Bouillier.
See, also, you can put her anywhere in a lineup, too. Yeah, you can put her anywhere. Fluke. And that's not true of everybody. And it's not a bad thing if you can't. Like, there are some players that have to be on the top line. That's certainly not a bad thing. But she's so, like, such a plug-and-play player where it's like, we need a third line winger who will get in the corner and do that work. Great, you got her. We need someone to fill in on the first line because one of our first line players has a job and can't travel. Great, you got it. Like, I don't know. She's a Swiss Army knife. It's really a mystery to me.
This will never happen, but it would be ultimate chaos if she ended up on the Riveters, don't you think? Emily Fluke in the same room with Madison Packer and Kelly Babstock.
I think Babstock.
Put them on the same line.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think that's the only way. It would be like collecting the Infinity Stones, right? Because you've got like the three most deeply chaotic, at times occasionally questionable physical players on one line. I wouldn't want to be on the ice. I wouldn't want to be on the ice. That's all I'm saying. I wouldn't want to be on the ice. So I don't know. Just think about it.
To finish the list that we've been talking about, you have Amanda Bouillier, who remains one of the best defenders in the world. But now you have a question of, is there cap space on Boston if Callie Flanagan is really making more than 80K a year? How much money is left for an Amanda Bouillier, a Kaylee Fratkin? Those are big questions. Then you have Mal Soliotis, who might be another player who might not fit into that picture anymore. Another player who, in my opinion, should have been in the All-Star conversation for a couple of years. That's a pretty robust list of like really good players. Janine Weber, like, I don't know if the fact that Janine Weber hasn't signed another player like Emily Fluke, where do you want Janine Weber? Anywhere in the lineup, I'd be super duper happy to have Janine Weber.
Also, her husband is like the coolest person ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, very, very nice. Not having him in the fans in a whale, like, he wears like a whale costume. I don't know. I feel like the intangibles are there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Intangibles are off the charts with Janine. And also, it would be really weird if the first season where we could have two Austrian players, we're only going to have one and it's not Janine Weber. So personally, I don't think that we should allow such things. But no, it's really interesting to me that this is happening, especially because the Riveters just seem to be signing free agents from other teams, which is kind of what they did last offseason, Dan. But it seems like they're targeting a different kind of free agent this time around, where they're looking at players with upside, not necessarily players to fill these depth roles like they did last season. And you have the Riveters roster, to me, remains like, this is like half United Nations, half you don't want to play there, we'll take you. Like it's this weird blend, and I guess what is it, Dan? Like three players from last year's team and then everyone else is gone?
Yeah. Just to follow up, you mentioned Mal Soliotis. She was one of the players that told me she hadn't had any contact with Boston regarding next season. So
how do you not talk to Mal Soliotis?
They have other stuff going on, I guess. I don't know. But she's reached out to other teams, and it's just a matter of, it's almost a kind of a similar situation to a Kersey, where it's I can't really stray too far from where my job is, but yeah, I still play hockey, and we all know she can still play at a high level. The Riveters is they've been interesting. I was a little unsure what we were going to really see. I thought at one point maybe we'd see the three returning players and the remaining roster would be all European players. Which wouldn't have been an issue for me at all. I mean, if that's the way they want to build their team, there's more than enough talented Europeans out there to fill a roster here. But they've sprinkled in some players from Buffalo and Connecticut, and they took Leah Marino from Toronto. I really like adding the two players from Buffalo. I think we may have discussed this a little bit on an earlier show where they brought in Harley and Kennedy Ganser, and Those are two young players that were two of Buffalo's best players last season. So with a little bit more support around them, with what looks to be a veteran Olympic-based kind of roster, they may perform even better if you find the right combinations there. And they added just recently Catherine Crawley from Connecticut. And they had already grabbed Casey Anderson and Taylor Marchand from Connecticut earlier in the offseason. So it's going to be an interesting team. I think we've also said before, it's going to be a lot of wearing name tags. Hi, my name is in the early part of training camp and stuff like that. But they're definitely an intriguing team as we go into this next season for sure.
I feel like big question for me there is not the talent at all. It's the chemistry.
Yeah.
And like we've seen teams, I mean, you see it in other sports all the time. I swear to God, Willie. We've seen teams like on paper be incredibly talented and just never figure it out. Yeah. And you could convince me either one of those things could happen this year. They could dominate everybody, or they could never click because a lot of these players have never played together. And it's interesting to think about that and then think about the similarities between what this Boston roster is going to look like and last year's, and maybe what this Connecticut roster is going to look like and last year's. And then the players on the Montreal team who have played together, is chemistry going to be in a short season? Is chemistry going to be something that is a backbreaker in the end? And if it is, how do you as a GM resist the urge to blow it all up again in the off season? Because at some point, like, you have to tough it out, right? Like, if it's the chemistry, I don't know. I think it's so interesting. It's one of the things that the short season really brings into sharp relief, because an NHL season, it's 82 games. If for the first 20 games, you're still figuring it out, that's fine. That's the whole PHF season. So good luck.
I mean, it's super interesting to me, especially because it's two veterans, Packer and Babcock, and then Kendall Cornine, who's a younger player, but she's an established player now, right? Like, but your core needs to be a little bigger than three players. Like, you need to, like you said, you need to kind of let things come together and gel a little bit. But I will say this, it's not a bad thing that the Riveters are really different from what they were last season. To be nice, that's where I'll leave that. But I mean, we saw a huge overhaul last season too. So it's, to me, they remain the most intriguing team outside of, obviously, to me, is Montreal's the most intriguing team, is what their final roster looks like and how they measure up to everyone. To kind of stick with the free agency stuff, there was a really long, long, long streak of signings where we didn't have salaries disclosed. When after everything got announced on the 20th of July, I think it was. So like the last most recent signing before very recently with Courtney Gardner of Toronto was Emily Harley. And then it was this streak, and we now have like less than one out of four players have chosen to disclose. And Courtney Gardner is the most recent, so congratulations to her. And I think, you know, I've always been kind of intentional with how I've said these things, but I think it's valuable and it's important. So, you know, stick taps to Courtney Gardner and everyone else who's choosing to disclose, for those who are in the position where they can, they feel comfortable to. I think it's important. But I know Eleni had, you had a really good thread about this when I had my thread about it, where like there's context here. This isn't just as simple as some players maybe being like, I don't want to, why would I? Like from what I understand about the process, there's a form you have to fill out. Not everyone wants to fill out. Not everyone agrees with that procedure. Not everyone is clear about like, what the hell is this about? Do I disclose every minute detail of my salary? Can I just give an estimate? When I kind of started my salary project, I wanted it to be completely open. Like if you want to tell me you're making between like 20 and 25K, that still helps everyone. If you're super vague about it, but still give a ballpark figure, right? You still get closer to an idea of what the marketplace looks like, which helps players negotiate for themselves. And it's been really interesting to see how this all unfolds, because, you know, where if there's internal pressure, is it at the team level? Is it at the league level, meaning ownership? From everything I've heard, the league was on board with transparency really from early on, because I think they recognized it's a PR win. Players are making more than ever before. They don't mind people knowing what players make. I don't know if that would be true of if we learned how much like a player makes on a PTO or something, which I'm always very curious about. But like the league minimum salary is 13.5K, which is really, really strong in the grand scheme of things. And that's even with the context of it was made that amount to be flexible for players. So I don't know if either of you want to weigh in on this. I think it's been, you know, to be frank, as someone who's pretty invested in this, like I've been a little disappointed that we've had so few players disclosed, but I also know that it's a long list of reasons why a player may choose not to disclose. And I always try to keep that in mind.
I mean, I think there definitely are players who are like, why would I want to do that? I'm not going to tell you that they're all like, I think the collective action as a concept in general in hockey, not specific to women's hockey, in hockey in general as a sport, is a really foreign concept. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that these people aren't smart or that they're not empathetic, but it's the kind of sport where I think partially because it's so white and because so much of the sport is people who are generally pretty well off, collective action is kind of a foreign concept to that subsection of society in general. So one of the reasons, Jesus Christ, come here.
Reasons, doesn't like privilege. He's
got white privilege himself. So one of the reasons that you might see WNBA players really do a great job with the concept of collective action is because most of them are not white and they know what community is and they have this, you know, I think that that's a hurdle that all hockey has to overcome and that's not different here. And I think that's something that they're struggling with culturally. And again, it's not a bad thing and they'll get there. I think it's the same thing with the concept of unionizing. It's been really difficult to have that conversation because it seems like a lot of work and it is. And I think they'll get there, but aside from the individual level, there are so many reasons why you might as an individual get caught up in so many other reasons that have nothing to do with you. Like there are definitely players who would be happy to disclose whose GMs have been like, you can, and I can't stop you, but let's have a conversation about it because
I've heard a lot of that.
And like, that's technically legal and I am not here to pass moral judgments. From a business perspective, I can understand why you would want to do that because if you're Boston and you somehow have Ally Thunstrom, Callie Flanagan, Corinne Schroeder, Elizabeth Gaguerre, you know, you've got this unbelievably stacked roster and you theoretically you have the same $750,000 as everybody else, but you obviously don't, right? Because if you did, right? So there are other ways that they're compensating these players and they are all legal ways to compensate them. It is now completely above the table for a team to offer a relocation stipend. I know that Carly Jackson got a relocation stipend to go to Toronto. Yeah. It's completely legal to pay signing bonuses. And this happens in the NHL all the time. I think Bergeron's contract is like very heavy on signing bonuses
for cap reasons. Performance and
Yeah. Okay. So you can do that in the PHF now. And if you're trying to fit Christina Putina and Taylor Wenskowski on your roster, one of them's probably mostly getting paid in signing bonuses, to be honest. And if you're a GM and you've got other teams being like, how fuck is he affording this? You're probably not going to be like, so we're going to disclose all of our salaries because the structure is gamesmanship. So it's not so much about, it's not anti-collective action and it's not, I mean, technically anti-labor, but it's really not intentionally anti-labor so much as it is. I cannot divulge all of my secrets of the ways that I'm building this roster or then everybody could do it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of it.
Connecticut does it. Then Toronto does it.
Then everybody's good. And then where would I be? Right. Well, I personally would be entertained, but I get it. I'm just saying I get it. And then I think also just a matter of like team culture. Like if you have followed the players on the Pride, you've noticed that every single time one of them signs, all of them share the signing on their Instagram story. If you're trying to build a team culture of not homogeneity, but unity in that sense, it's the same thing as like the Yankees don't have players' names on the back of their jerseys because what's important is the crest on the front. I think that's bullshit, but it doesn't matter. My point is, if you are trying to build that kind of a culture, you might be like, look, you can disclose your salary if you want to, but I think that it detracts from the locker room for everybody to know everybody's business. And what's important is that we're all on the same team. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some of that going on in general.
How about you, Dan?
I'll say two quick things on this. One, I think it looks worse than it is, or it feels worse than it is, and I feel for you because I know you put a lot of work into this and a lot of effort into it. But I feel like because it's like we get one signing a day or one signing every couple of days, it's kind of like watching water drip into a bucket, right? And you're waiting for the bucket to get filled up. Now, if they would have done it from the start where it was like each player can disclose when they sign, I think it still might have, we still might have gotten to this point. But if they did it as a whole at the on the onset of the season, as training camps open, here's, you know, five players from each team who decided to disclose the salaries. Maybe it would have been a better look that way, but it's also everybody's kind of new, transitioning, whatever you want to. I know there are excuses, but, you know, they're trying to do like 16 different things at the same time, getting ready for the season, bringing in a new team, negotiating player contracts, a TV deal, I'm sure, or extension of whatever the TV deal is. I'm sure they're working through all these things, and it's just something that. And I also think my other point would be, I think some players just don't have that interest of revealing what they're making for whatever reason. It might be they don't want people to scrutinize them, for better or for worse. Sometimes I think that plays into it too, but. Overall, I think it just kind of looks worse because we're getting it drip by drip, and it's kind of like I said, like watching that bucket be filled up by one drip at a time.
I will say I wanted to add two quick things to this. One is there's definitely a factor of, let's say you're the player who's making the most on your team, maybe even the league, and you're playing on a team where you have a bunch of players, you know, getting the league minimum. I think the optics of that are a lot different when the league minimum isn't the living wage. And when you're making the most, you are living very comfortably. You know, in our interview with Audie McDougal, she disclosed that like this is the first time she hasn't had to have a summer job because she can just focus on hockey. We learned that Bucky was in the same position, that she was able to quit her job at FedEx. It's like, it's a lifestyle change. It's a difference in lifestyles and your approach to pro hockey, what your life means. If you show up for practice and all you have to worry about is being a pro hockey player, it's very different from someone who just finished a 9-to-5. You know what I mean? And that is a conversation that I think is important to have in terms of why some players like, I don't want everyone to be pissed off that I'm making twice or three times or four times as much as someone else. And that's very valid. And that's not to say that players don't deserve to get what they're getting. I remember going into all this being like, even if we only know some, it's still something. And it's still true. I think it is just harder, right? It's just a couple bones missing from the skeleton to give us an idea of what the marketplace looks like to help players to, and that's what this is about. But I think all the points raised by Lenny and you as well, Dan, makes a lot of sense. It's not easy for players to be like, this is what I'm making. And now everyone knows. And there's been, you know, players, I've also heard stories of players who did disclose and they saw how some people reacted on Twitter being like, oh, she only got this much. She got screwed. And I got to tell you, that fucking sucks that we've had players have that reaction to trying to do this thing that helps everyone and making good money, especially in the sport, making more than they ever have. By an exponential value, by the way, in some cases that I am aware of. And then people and the public discourse being like, oh, she got robbed. Like, context is super important for these things. And I hope that as a community, we're very mindful of that moving forward, because I feel like we need to help create an environment where everyone feels like they're not going to be judged for what they make. Whether they're on the lower end or the higher end, or everyone is like, you deserve so much more. They all deserve more. That's what we all know. They all deserve to be making a living wage. We get that. But they got to fit into a $750 cap. And you have a minimum roster of 20 players. Anyway, I always end up on a soapbox when I talk about this.
Well, I mean, I feel like that also fits into a larger conversation about like the way that we treat female athletes in general in comparison to the way that we talk about you know, male athletes on Twitter and in general. I think there's some stuff that we should be able to say, regardless of the gender of the player, like discussing a player's stats, being able to say, I think this player has hit their ceiling, or I think this player is a good middle six player, but oh my God, come here. Come here. Maybe not someone that you would sign for a top line role or whatever. We should be able to say that. Yeah. But I also think that, like, there's some stuff that male athletes put up with that they shouldn't have to. And it's in the smaller fishbowl of women's sports, it's really, really, it's like it echoes when it happens. I know, Willie, it sucks. It's
it
really
echoes
hard.
Like a dog bark, doesn't
yeah,
it?
It's really, it's so, there's so much noise.
I will add to one thing that I know from talking to people, like one of the things that like the teams are trying to get players to relocate, right? To come to their area to play on their team. That's one thing that the Riveters have had a little bit of an issue with, where they lost out on a couple of players, I think, where they weren't sure about what the cost of living would be in New York, New Jersey, as compared to maybe somewhere in Minnesota or even playing overseas in Finland or Sweden. So that's another thing that these teams have to navigate. The cost of living, like Buffalo is in a good spot where the cost of living there isn't as great as it is in down in Massachusetts or especially in Connecticut and New Jersey. But, you know, that's just another thing that these GMs have to navigate when they're negotiating with players to get them to come to their squads.
Yeah, lots to say about that, but we're going to move on to talking about some of these players, some of these big names. This is like this ongoing thing that's always existed, is this the friction people talk about with the PHF and the PWHPA, right? And specifically leadership within those two groups. And it's pretty apparent that Hockey Canada and the Canadian Women's National Team is the PWHPA. The lines are pretty blurred there, right? It's a similar group with influence, which is why it was a pretty big deal that we had four current PHF players invited to Hockey Canada's, what is it, the Fall Festival Camp? I think I always just call it camp. It's Bucky, it's Jaguar, it's Olivia Knowles, who signed with
Minnesota
Whitecaps, and then it's Corinne Schroeder. So it's quite a thing to have PHF players in camp, and it kind of goes to show you, like, some of the commentary we heard specifically about Bucky from Pooh and others, like, they have to acknowledge, like, yeah, she's a real player. Like, you can't deny that what she's doing is significant. And I will say, watching one of the scrimmages, didn't love seeing Michaela Grant Mentis on a fourth line in a intra-squad game where there's four different rosters. Why is she on a fourth line? Don't know what that's all about. Don't love that at all. But I don't know. Eleni, I feel like of all of us, you would have the most insight on this. Hockey Canada and the PHF, what's going on?
Well, I think it's gotten to the point where they can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things happening in Hockey Canada right now on both sides. And a lot of it is really, really, really bad optically.
Yeah.
And I think it's gotten to the point where, like, if there is a hole in that dam that you can plug, you're going to plug it. I think that I think calling her in was important. I also think everything that I've heard about the way that Hockey Canada runs their camp and their testing is archaic. And there are reasons why players like Lauren Gabel and Daryl Watts don't make rosters when everybody thinks that they should. Sometimes maybe it's a locker room thing, but a lot of times it's like they literally will send you home if you fail the beep test. They will send you home on the spot if you fail the beep test. I think they are maybe not doing that anymore. but I also think that if you don't fit in a very narrow set of what they want the team to look like, you're going to get paid dust still. So being called into camp is kind of the first part of a very multifaceted way to get on the roster. And the way they evaluate talent maybe takes into account things like, does someone have a very heavy French accent? Is this a person who went to school in an English-speaking province? Is this a person who looks like everybody else on the team? If this person is a gay person, do they present in a way that is not, you know, quote unquote, distracting? Like, we're still doing that shit in 2022. And it's not specific to Hockey Canada. I think that that is just the sport in general at its highest level. But all that to say, I don't expect her to make an official roster. And if she does, they're going to scratch her a lot. And it's very difficult not to feel as though, from an outsider perspective, they were like, okay, stop yelling at us. We're sick and tired of being yelled at. We called her in, and everyone else is better. I don't know what to tell you. You know, like, that kind of seems like what they're priming us for. I also think that it's not fair to compare her really with some of these other players. I don't think that she had any idea this was coming. And a lot of the fitness testing that they do at these camps is not something that a random normal person would do with their time. And there's a reason why most of the players on the senior national team are players who have come up through junior national teams, because they know what the expectations are. So I don't know. I think it's a clusterfuck. I'm very excited for her. I'm so glad that she's there. I'm not expecting a massive shift in Hockey Canada's culture at any point soon. I think that we are still at the point where having two back-to-back captains of the Canadian team who are from Quebec is a massive deal for that federation and for that country. So we are 15 years behind culturally where Twitter thinks we are. And that is what I will say about that. If you want to ask me about the U.S., talk about that later.
But we'll do that next podcast. Dan, do you have any thoughts on PHFers in Hockey Canada camp?
My only thought was Hockey Canada hasn't done a lot right the last couple of weeks, years, months. But somehow they figured out a way to break a PHF signing. I think our
I forgot about
that. Michelle scoped that out. She was a scoop J over there. So that they had Corinne Schroeder listed as part of the Boston Pride team. And, you know, that turned out to be a signing that was actually real. I think we all went, oh, really? Like, so who's not coming back on Boston? because they had three goalies last year. I mean, shit, I wouldn't put it past Paul Maher to go into this season with four goalies, because they do some kind of gymnastics with their roster that I can't figure out. But that was the big takeaway for me from all this was, oh, we have a new goalie on Boston, and she's really freaking good. So, that's my thoughts on that.
I, like Eleni, I can't help but be cynical. I will say, like, this means a lot to the families of these players, especially Bucky's family. This is a player who's been overlooked throughout her collegiate career, wasn't invited for U18s, was not in the picture. And then I got to tell you, you think of players like Anne-Sophie Bette and how long it took for her to finally get the opportunity with Team Canada. And then you look at these opportunities that we're seeing players like Bucky get, and like players like, oh, Claire Thompson wasn't on Hockey Canada's radar. And what did Claire Thompson do? Right. Obviously, the system misses players. And obviously, there's a bunch of awful politics and horseshit, as Eleni alluded to, a lot of it, which is very much real and very much determines which names end up on this final list. I hope Bucky continues to prove everyone wrong. And I hope she gets a real opportunity, a real chance. Because in my opinion, I don't think there's any doubt that she's one of the 50 best players in the world. I don't think it's even close. She's very easily in there. She's just, when you watch her play, you're like, oh yeah, she's unbelievable. If you give her the opportunity, she'll reward you.
What did Autumn say about her last week or 2 weeks ago when we talked to her? She said she's one of the best players on the planet, right? Like,
yeah.
You see the respect that her peers have for her. Super ultra talented, and you can bet your bottom dollar that Buffalo is excited that she's on their team this year and won't be doing to them what she did to them last year when they played Toronto.
Yeah, but you know, I do think some of this is the optics of like, well, we can't not invite the $80,000 pro player, right? Like, I do think there's some of that going on, and also the optics. Hockey Canada can take any fucking win they can get right now, so
yeah,
well, they'll take it where they can. To move on to some more off the ice stuff, which is, I mean, we're getting close to mid-August. Some teams have some big front office things to fill. But we should mention first that the Whitecaps have a new home. We mentioned a bit about how Montreal is kind of going to be like a little barnstorming thing throughout the province of Quebec. No more Tree Rink. It's Richfield now. So, which from the accounts I've heard is not a bad place for them. They're going to have their own locker room, and I'm hoping it's a better home for them. I'd never been to Tria. I never went to a Whitecaps home game, so I can't speak to whether or not it was a great location for them. Personally, I always thought it was fun and distracting that during day games that there would be sunlight on the ice, but you know, those are the things that I think about because I'm a dork.
Not a goalie friendly environment.
Not a goalie friendly environment when you have to deal with glare.
And if goalie ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
It's a bigger
rink, which I think is interesting.
It's further away for the other teams coming in now. Like they have a little bit like a further drive, I guess, from the airport is what I've been told. But for the Whitecaps, it's they have more amenities. It's going to be their place where they can set up their gear and they don't have to shuffle it in and out and those kind of things. So. It'll have advantages for them, so that's what we like. We like to see players getting things like that they deserve.
But if you want to rent and have your own hockey rink for a season, it's $5,000 a month. So keep that figure in mind. We will when we pull together our savings to get our own team. $5,000 a month is what it's going to take.
Speaking of teams, if you great segue, I crushed it. If you personally could name the Montreal team anything, what would you name it? You don't have to give me options. You can just pick a name and then tell me why.
Dan keeps getting Marauders stuck in my head on Twitter. It's driving me nuts.
I don't know why Marauders always pops into my head too, but that's always my first go. It's probably the double M, the alliteration.
Here's the thing. The six has grown on me a little bit, but I still think it's a terrible name. I'm sorry.
It's fire.
Listen,
I don't disagree. I feel like what saves the six for me is how cool the logo is.
The logo saved it. It's the coolest unicycle I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I've seen some pretty cool unicycles in my day.
So long as they don't name it the seven, I'm not going to be too upset.
They would never. They might do it in French, but it will not be seven. I want them to name it the Montreal Magpies because this is kind of a deep cut, but there's a river in Quebec called the Magpie River, and it empties into the St. Lawrence River. And I think that birds are cool, and I think that bird mascots are cool, and I think that bird mascots that aren't eagles are cool, and magpies are affectionately psychotic, so it would be really cool.
I was gonna say, aren't magpies like serial killer birds? Don't they?
Yeah, but it would be cool. Like, okay. I don't know. You got like wolves and stuff. Like, why can't we have magpies? Wolves kill things.
This might be because I just rewatched Moon Knight. But what about the Montreal Moonlight?
I will tell you, if they did that, I would be singing Dancing in the Moonlight constantly. Which is not
there's your goal song.
Not a Lenny. Con.
There's your goal song.
I feel like that's a terrible goal song.
It's not the best.
The goal horn's like and then it's like dancing in the moonlight.
That would get old pretty quick for the opposition.
Not sure. Is there a French version of it? I'm sorry. I'm just gonna keep making that joke.
But how fire would the jerseys be for Moonlight? Come on, that would be.
Yeah, the Magpies would be like black, white, and red. Nasty.
That's what we need, another black jersey in the PHF.
We need more black jerseys always. I will not tolerate this.
We need a purple jersey. We need something different for the love of God.
Yeah,
the Montreal Megalodon.
Purple and yellow, something like that. We have different colors.
Montreal Manta Rays. manta rays.
Do they have manta rays in Quebec?
Probably not. But they don't have jazz in Utah.
I'm Googling Quebec wildlife. Yeah. They do have jazz in Utah. Quebec wildlife. I mean, I live next door to Utah. I guess I'll go check it out. There are whales there. There are seabirds, including puffins.
Puffins? It's not alliterative.
I feel like Pittsburgh puffins. We gotta leave that.
Yeah, we should go with Pittsburgh.
Four species of seals. Caribou.
Black bears. Is one of them a monk seal? Because that's an M.
Moose.
Moose?
Montreal moose, that would work.
The moose is loose.
Oh my god, imagine. Every power play, you're like, the moose is loose! Anyway, if anyone wants to hire us to run a hockey team, I feel like...
we are an imposing brain trust as a trio.
In addition to picking a name, Montreal has a lot of other things that they need to fill. Like a coach would be nice that you've signed all these players, but they don't have a coach yet. Like, how do you think that's going to play out for them?
I have one last one for you, Dan. The Monarchs, but it's butterfly themed.
Monarchs. You could go Monarchs.
Orange and black jerseys. Yes. You got a Lenny's black jersey?
Yes, I'm in. I'm absolutely in. And they migrate, so it makes sense with the barnstorming.
They migrate, Dan.
Boom. Galaxy.
It's a hockey team. They travel.
I think it's going to be fine as long as they have a coach by the end of this month. If it's mid-September and they don't have a coach, then I'm worried. It's August.
Yeah.
You know, like, most of these players know each other. They're probably mostly training together anyway. It's going to be okay. But if it's this time next month and we don't know, and they don't... Not only do we not know, because it's possible that they have a coach and they don't announce it. If it's this time next month and as far as we know, they do not have one, then I'm scared. But I'm not scared yet.
I'm scared that Minnesota doesn't have a GM. Just me? It's the state of hockey. You can't find someone to run the freaking team?
This is true.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Given how we've heard some of the contract negotiations have gone, I feel like at some point you would look around and be like, hey, we might be burning some bridges with the people that make all this possible. Maybe we address this and maybe we go out of our way. I don't know. Or one of these players that you scorned, ask Winnie Broke Brown, BGM. Talk to one of these players who quote unquote aged out of being on the ice. Get them involved like they should be. Because this is that team. Like, that legacy still matters. I would like to see something like that happen, but it makes too much sense, so it never will happen. But that's me throwing down the gauntlet. Either that or somebody just hired Dan. Dan moves out to Minnesota and runs a hockey team. That's the other option. Dan's wearing a white cap shirt.
It's weird to me that it will be weird to me if we get to the season and games have started and neither of the Brodt sisters are playing. And it'll be even weirder because they signed a Brodt as well.
But not a Brodt.
But no relation to them. So that'll be the weird moment for me, I think, with them. Hopefully that, you know, something, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't want to, start.
That's what I'll say. Someone should do the right thing for that organization. It's the same ownership group that owns the Buttes. The Buttes look really well run for the most part. I know there's like controversial roster decisions and stuff. That roster came together.
It's intentional. There's a difference. I think that it's very easy to look at those teams and be like, Pretzels is the same, but Pretzels is not the same. Have you guys not seen that video?
Different tags for this episode. Birds
been,
are cool.
I'm trying to get all my jokes out. It's been a minute. They're not the same because I don't think shit that's going on in Minnesota is intentional at all.
No.
I really think it's just like, they're like, half the time, the acting GM is on a yacht in Greece and like nobody can get a hold of him. This is a real thing that happened. And yeah, and that's not Nate Oliver. So let's just be very clear about what's going on.
Yes.
Nate and his team have personally been in contact with like at least 100 players, and the decisions that they're making are intentional, and you don't have to agree with them, and that's fine, but there's like a plan, and there's like, and the there same thing with the Riveters.
Plan. Is that what this is called that we're not seeing? Is that the word for this, Eleni? A plan?
There's so many synonyms, and none of them are in Minnesota, as it turns out. Lots of lakes, only vibes. No plan, no all intention. Vibes,
no plan.
You know who should be the coach?
The coach of Montreal?
Yeah. They should steal Julie Chu, and she should coach.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's not going to happen, right? Because she coaches with her partner, Carolyn Ouellette. But it would be really cool, and I would cry a lot. So, food for thought.
My other food for thought is they should have a girls' team, like, you know, a girls' program, and it should be called the Caterpillars if they're the Monarchs. And that's my last thought.
Oh, Jesus.
Dan's, like, babysitting toddlers tonight.
Dan, I don't know. Because caterpillars turn into butterflies. I don't know if that was known to everyone.
I got that connection.
They kind of throw up all over themselves and they go into this hard case and then they become a butterfly.
You know what I thought about the other day? I was thinking about veterans who are still free agents. And then I was thinking about like college grads from the last year who are free agents. And I was thinking about Aaron Frankel. I'm often thinking about Aaron Frankel. I am usually thinking about her. Connecticut only has one goalie signed.
But Miri.
They have two goalies signed. They just only announced one, from what I've been told.
Oh, man, you're right. I forgot.
Montreal has two. Toronto has two.
Boston has one, but I've
Boston either has one or 17. We're not sure.
Schrodinger's goalie.
They have four.
I feel quite confident they're signing Lovisa Salander again.
I would hope so. She's had all the press opportunities.
Yeah, I was like, she's everywhere. Like, they took her to the Revolution game. They're not signing her.
Lolo, thanks for coming out. Tough news.
She's allowed to hang out with them. They're her friends.
No, you know, but
the thing is, like, if I don't know. I just wish that someone had thrown the bag at Aaron Frank. I don't think she would have taken it, but just like it would have been really fun.
You don't know if somebody did. Paul Mara might have done it for all we know. Like, he's trying to assemble like six all-star teams over there. So, but kudos to them. They look like they're going to be just as formidable this year as they were last year.
If you could add one person. Yeah. Since the Buttes are the roster that's like closest to being done, if you could add one player from the existing like free agent pool, it can be a veteran or someone who has recently graduated that you're thinking of, to round out that team, if you were only allowed to add one more, who would you add and why?
Boo. She's the best player available to me. Like, she's a zone exit wizard, and that's what the Buttes have struggled with the past couple seasons. They brought in a lot of great puck moving D who should help with that. I don't know. Boo is really good. Like, I would build a blue line around Boo.
A Boo line?
A Boo line.
Oh, my God. you're going to end up on your own corny list. I just see.
It takes a corn to know a corn. So I was already on the corny list.
I'm going to agree with Mike. I was going to say like a Janine Weber just to give like Buffalo another.
That would be a good fit too.
But man, like Boulier just makes every team just so much better. Like, with the team that Buffalo already has, like having her at the point, just distributing the puck to everybody, man, that would be something lethal. Like, and who knows? Maybe Buffalo has that defender on their roster, and we're just not aware of it because we haven't seen them play actually physically together yet. I would go with Boulier too.
Tough to beat Boulier. What about you, Eleni? Who are you adding to that Buffalo roster? Of who's available in terms of free agents or recent college grads.
I'm checking to make sure that this person was actually a senior last year before I say it. They weren't. Never mind. That's tampering. Don't do that.
The one-liners from Eleni tonight. That's tampering. Don't do that.
Legal advice. Not legal advice. Not legal advice. Actually, oh, I forgot that Taylor Hayes is going back to Minnesota for another year.
Yeah, she scored a lot of points.
I think that it would be really funny. I always think it's funny when a player graduates from the University of Minnesota and someone random snipes them. I think it's funny in men's sports. I think it's funny in women's sports because it's so like half of the Minnesota Wild went to the University of Minnesota. I think you can make a really good argument for Boo. I think all things being equal, I kind of feel like Emily Fluke would be really fun in Buffalo because the roster is so young and they're, I think about like watching Emma Newton at Mercyhurst even, and like the chaos and how fun it would be to have like someone you can slap an A on and not worry about it, who is going to encourage the level of psychotic competition that is going to be required to win games, because it is partially mental, and like you have to have someone in your locker room that will start chewing drywall if you're losing. You have to have that kind of player in the room. And I just don't know if there's anybody that's more competitive than Emily Fluke. I feel like the list is very short.
Make it very hard out there to play against if she was on that team.
And I think that's a great example to set for players who are coming in from, we don't have Kayla Grant Mentis. We have one of those. We don't need another one. Yeah. We need you to play your guts out. And I'm not going to ask you to do that unless I'm going to do it. I just feel like it's a good example to set. And I think it would be fun for her to continue her tour playing for different PHF teams also.
Also center depth. We like center depth.
Anyone who can take a face off.
Yeah. So as we wind down, we need to know before we get to the corny list, which is obviously very important. Dan and Eleni, noted insiders. Is there any scuttlebutt? Is there any interesting tidbits? Is there any little something-somethings you've heard?
Well, we just kind of mentioned, I think I'm pretty confident in saying that Miri Räisänen, will be back with Räisänen. The Connecticut Whale. I don't know if there were other teams interested in her, but I know that she reached out to, in addition to Connecticut, she reached out to other teams as well, but I don't know if that interest was mutual, but she ends up back in Connecticut. I think she got hurt. That was the last time we saw her playing in this league when it was the NWHL.
It was a knee injury.
She got barreled.
Cameron Easy? Who was it that smashed
her? Hannah Brandt. How dare you slam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
I think Laura Brennan actually ended up playing in that game. So shout out
to
Laura.
She did. Awesome. And she did a great job.
I don't think she gave up a goal, or maybe she gave up one in like 50 shots or something, because Minnesota was halcyon back then. But addition to that, Connecticut will also be bringing back Melissa Samoskevich, I heard. So that's another signing that they have that they haven't released yet. Still no word on Shannon Turner. I think my opinion is that she's going to be back, but that's just my opinion. That's not fact or anything like that. Friend of the show, Megan Pizon, has re-signed with Minnesota. Pretty neat to see, because they don't have a lot of returners coming back like the Riveters. I think they have maybe four or five. But you can go look on the team store and you can see whose numbers have been given out that was on the team last year and kind of deduce like who's not coming back. I think
that's messed up.
I think they gave out a 5 and an 8 and a 21.
Don't retire Winnie's
11. So, yeah, a couple of players like that. And the last thing, you know, we mentioned Mal Soliotis earlier, Taylor Kersey earlier, both still looking for a job or for a home. Katrina Morozova, she's been in talks with a couple of teams. I feel confident saying that the Riveters are out on her. And it's either probably going to be Minnesota or Connecticut. or back to Sweden, where she's playing on like basically an all-star team with Brynäs.
Yeah, Laura Stalder, yeah, and Brynäs. Yeah.
Like, so that's a matter of, you know, her picking her choice. But
if you're Minnesota and you fumble this bag when you already have Shishova on your roster, unforgivable. That's an unforgivable fumble. That's a butt fumble.
It's a Mark Sanchez fumble. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got. You got anything, Lenny?
Most of what I know, don't ask me how I ended up here. Most of what I know is PWHPA related, not PHF related. But I know Tara Hoffman is also still looking for a contract. I think that's really going to come down to who in the PHF is willing to carry three goalies and who isn't. I think a lot of teams with the salary cap structure changing are now not super willing to carry three goalies, which I don't know if I agree with, but I
guess. If I was running a team, I would have a third goalie.
I think it depends. I think it depends on where you are. Because if you're in Minnesota or you're in Boston and there's just like hockey players, you throw a dart on the street. Again, don't do that. And you hit a goalie. Like, there's just hockey players everywhere. You probably aren't super worried about making sure you have a third goalie signed. I think in areas where the PWHPA is likely to also be playing, that maybe would make me feel like I should have an insurance goalie signed. Montreal is one of those places. Yeah. Toronto is one of those places. I also think that Montreal's roster maybe isn't quite as expensive as some of the other ones. They might, at this point, they might be more willing to spend a little money on a third goalie. But yeah, I know she's still looking for a contract. We don't really talk about the PWHPA that much on this podcast, but I know that there are only going to be two US teams this year, which is interesting when you think about how the CWHL and the NWHL existed.
Yeah.
And maybe shed some light onto the PHF being like, yeah, we have a Montreal team. Don't forget, we have one. I think they always planned on doing it, but I think that both organizations are kind of stepping on each other's necks a little bit and really ratcheting the pressure up, which is great for the sport. I think that knowing that what we know, which is that mostly the PWHPA rosters are going to be national team players, and there are only two teams in the US. US based players in Minnesota and in New England are going to be gunning really hard for PHF rosters or going overseas. Because you're just not like you're not making those rosters. There's 35, 40 people on the expanded US pool. It's going to be really tough to fit those spots. So I think basically what I've heard is that a lot of players are very aware of this. Like, I think that they're making decisions based on where they're going to play the most minutes, especially because what we know about the PWHPA setup is that the players are apparently all going to get paid the same amount. So if you think you can get paid more than whatever that amount is on Toronto or Montreal or Minnesota, you're going to do it. And I think that explains a lot about players like Sidney Brote signing in Minnesota, who has been with the PWHPA playing like third line minutes. Mostly she's going to play first line minutes for the Whitecaps, and she's almost definitely going to get paid a lot more than she would to be a healthy scratch half the time for a Minnesota team that is like oversaturated with all the Wisconsin and Minnesota people on those national team rosters. So I think just, I always say this, but I'm going to say it again, urging people to experience some hesitation when they try to assign some kind of moral, when they try to read into players' decisions where they're going to play. It truly, in the year of our Lord 2022, for most of them, it's not that deep. They're not thinking about labor. Like, they're not thinking about sticking it to the man or speaking truth to power. They just want to play hockey. And the players who can afford to be in a position where they're still at least saying that they're thinking about labor issues or whatever, are the players who were never going to lose their spot anyway. And I think that maybe we collectively should reflect on the discourse around this whole thing, and decide whether or not it makes any sense for us to continue to do this demented little song and dance when the players just don't care about it anymore.
Yeah.
And the players, you know, it's they're showing us what it's going to be. That's all I'm going
to
say.
The thing I say over and over again, and I say it to PHF players, I say it to PWHPA players, is I write about everything I can because at the end of the day, I'm a hockey fan. And I don't feel like anyone should ever feel like, oh, I have to be, if I'm a PHF fan, I can't be a PWHPA. No, just, it's like Eleni said, these are not like rival gangs, right? This is not a civil war. Just, these are players, they just want to play hockey. They're going to pursue the opportunities that present themselves. And, you know, for certain players, the PWHPA path is what's right for them right now. That could change next week. Just like players in the PHF who maybe didn't find a spot playing with their team. Maybe they say, you know what, I just want to play, even if I'm playing on the third line of a PWHPA team. Maybe that's where we see some of the players we've discussed, is maybe they can do a showcase weekend and everyone will be like, oh, she was scorned by the Boston Pride and now she's on a PWHPA team and that means she's changed camps. No. Let's not do that. For the love of God, please don't. In the year of our Lord. Context, and don't get ridiculous. Is it time for corn?
It is corn time. I feel like we need like a jingle for corn time. Hey, if you're listening to this and you want to write us a cornless jingle, let me know. I will pay you. Probably not like a lot of money, but I will pay you for it.
Will you pay them in corn or money?
Money. I will pay you in currency. So I'm just going to briefly go over my corn list. My corn list as of August 11th at 7:24 Mountain Time PM is the Boston Pride. They are topping my corn list. To be clear, not the players. I don't think they're corny. I actually think that they're some of the best Instagram followers in the PHF. So shout out to them for the Insta content. I just think that the way that the Pride ownership group and management have fumbled the bag this offseason is it's like legitimately at the point where it is painful to watch. And it sucks because the players are so marketable. They are so, like, being there when they won and like listening to them talk, Katie Burt's speech about how they were the underdogs, which like was never really true. You know what I mean? Like, it was giving Tom Brady. Like, they could be, you could market the hell out of them being like the most hated team in women's sports. Like, do
evil
it.
Empire.
Anything, evil empire. Anything. Give me anything. And instead, you know, they hired an agency who clearly doesn't really know anything about the sport and doesn't know anything about the demographics of the following to do their media, socials, whatever. It's bad. It looks bad. I mean, we've had college students do this for free with other teams that have done better. I think that everyone over there is really nice, but nice don't pay the bills. And the Boston Pride could be a franchise that is valued at over $2-3 million if they would just put the effort in to follow what NWSL and WNBA teams are doing to market their teams and make it look professional. And it just doesn't, and the players deserve better. They should be spending money. They should be breaking the bank on hiring people who will come in and do things that are really innovative on socials and press releases for each player that gets announced.
Are you saying that content is important, Eleni?
Yeah. Among other things, yes, I think content is really important. So they're topping the corny list. I could talk about this for a long time, but I don't really think there's any point in doing that, so I'm not going to. Also on the corny list, anyone who's still doing like genuinely serious discourse about the PHF, PWHPA rift, you're out of your mind. I'm so sorry. Please, I need you to go outside and touch grass. Like, it's time. it's time to go outside and interact with another human being, because it's just, it's been over for so long. And there's just no, it's, I don't understand how you're convincing yourself that this is still like anything substantially beyond what it so clearly is. And like, the thing is, like, you'll see players break up, and then one of them goes to the PHF, and it's very clear to me in that moment that it's like, this was never about labor. It's about, this is where my girlfriend's playing, and that's where I'm gonna play, you know, like, and that's fine, because dudes make decisions on where they play sports all the time based on where is my stuff, where sure. are my parents, you know, like, I think that they should be entitled to. But if you are still logging on to Twitter in 2022 to do a thread about anti-labor discourse as it respects to professional hockey players making decisions about where they're playing, please stop. Very corny. The last, bringing up the rear on my corny list,
everybody, the corn caboose, if you will.
The corn caboose.
The butt end of corn.
Yeah, you know, like when you have the things in the corn and you have to take the like little pin out of the end of the corn so you can get to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we are now geographically. The end of the corn, the end of the corny list, I think, has to be anybody who passed on signing Brooke Stacey before today. If anybody passed on her, and that's how she ended up in Montreal, I don't have anything to say to you. She will say it all this season when she plays. I think that's.
Brooke Stacey's so good at hockey.
It occurred to me that, like, I know that that's, it's probably closest to home for her, I would guess.
Yeah.
But I think there are very few players in the league who are that good and were not approached by at least one other team. If you had the opportunity to have that person on your roster and you did not take it, that's like burnt popcorn level corny. It's bad.
That is like an all-star professional lead-in, because I wanted to mention that in one of our next episode, maybe our very next episode, we will be joined by Brooke Stacey at some point from the new Montreal Monarchs, unnamed team, whatever they're going to be.
It's going to be so much less cool than every single one of the ones we brought.
We'll have Brooke name the team. I'm sure Kevin Raphael.
They should let her name the team. They should let her be the... I don't know. Do they have presidents? What do they have in the provinces? Whatever representative politically. Each province.
How does Canadian
has.
Government work? What's the way?
Better than ours, I'm sure.
So that's Prime Minister. That's what we could ask her about, but I believe it was, you know, this was, for her, it was either there has to be a team in Montreal for me to play, or I'm not going to play because this is where I'm located. My family is.
I'm retracting the corn caboose.
No, but if you're another team, if you're Toronto, if you're Buffalo, you have to at least reach out for it.
She can't refuse.
Yeah, you have to at least, like, what would it take to sign you? If you say no, you say no, but at least I tried, right?
There was in her only real PHF season, like, she played in Lake Placid, of course. But, I mean, as Dane will tell you, especially when I tried to make the awards happen, and Dan crapped all over my awards that year. like, Brooke Stacey was an unstoppable force on that Buffalo team. Like,
she was for Maine, too.
Yeah, and she's a rocket ship on the ice. She's so fast and so strong. And it's just like, oh, Brooke's on her fifth breakaway of the game, and everyone's trying to stop her from doing it, and no one seems to be able to stop her.
And she just never got the same attention that some of the other players, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I will amend my corn caboose and say that the instead, the corn caboose is anybody who tucks their jerseys in. Corny.
Anti-jersey tuck?
Yes, yeah. I'll tell you why. Because in the PHF, they don't put the names on the top of the jersey because everyone's ponytails. Ooh. They put them on the bottom. So if you tuck your jersey in, none of us... I mean, I know who everybody is by how they skate, but I'm a freak. So it makes it really difficult for everybody to know what's going on. Please don't tuck your jersey in. I know you're going to do it anyway, and I'm sure I'm going to get hate for this from my friends that are hockey players. It's corny. Also corny, not back-checking. Okay,
Taylor Chrissy's a big jersey tucker.
It's corny. I'm sorry. I would tell her to her face.
She just called her corny.
I'm not scared of her.
I would tell
her. She thinks cereal is soup. We've had this conversation. Anyway, please untuck your jersey and back check for the health of your goaltender.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew the corny list was going to be well worth the wait, and it certainly was. I'm already riveted for the next installment, but we had a lot to cover. Thank you all so much for listening. Maybe by the next time we record, there'll be like an eighth team, ninth team. Maybe some of these teams love names and general managers. Yeah. Who knows? But, you know, it's a lot of players are signed and, you know, looking at what I think I did the math. We should have ballpark 150 players in the PHF next year. I got to tell you, 150 players making at least 13.5K. It's pretty big deal. I don't think we talk about it enough. I know we all want to get to the point everyone makes a living wage, and I'm all for that. But it's a really special time in the sport, and that makes every time we record really great. It's because overwhelmingly, it's exciting shit to talk about, and that's something to celebrate. And I hope that we continue to hear, especially we know a lot of the really wonderful people in the sport. You know, we're all quietly and maybe not so quietly rooting for a lot of them to find spots on teams and for these teams to continue to come together. But until next time, I was Mike.
I was Eleni, not Mike.
And I'm Dan. Thank you everybody again for tuning in. Future Considerations podcast. We'll see you on the other side.
Bye-bye.
Stop for 2 seconds to let me speak. Sit quietly. Come here. Come here. Come here. Come here. Oh my God, the cat's attacking him. Come here. Okay, be quiet.
Oh no.
Sit down and be quiet. Oh my God.